Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the Zudio in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys flapping gums and being chums, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, we're doing another reassumption rebootle rebuttal. From time to time, we like to do what we call a reassumption, which is we go back and we review a movie that is well known from a while ago to see if it still holds up, quote unquote. And lately, we've been having fun with, like, we did with Clash of the Titans, where the original well-known movie has a reboot, so we'll do both of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And we came across another potential to do that when we were doing our Head of the Apocalypse, series,
yes,
which we just finished. So you can go back and listen to that. We're picking who we want in our bunker during an apocalypse from pop culture and such. So one of my choices was Jed Eckert, who was Patrick Swayze's character in the original Red Dawn. And it came up when I said original Red Dawn, Mikey was like, there's another one? And there is, there's another one. So this is a good for a reboot and reassumption. So reassumption, rebuttal, rebootle. We haven't really come up with what to call this series. So basically it's two podcasts. We do the original on the first one. We go through it, review it. At the end, give it a pizza rating, and then next week we'll come back and do the reboot. And then you see which one holds up better, which one is better. There we go, right?
Oh, I'm with you. And I love the title Rebootle, because just alliteration alone, that's great. But I think for both of us, we are sort of anti-reboot. If you make it once, there's really no need to make it again. So I like that this is a chance for us to like actually compare it, you know, go into it open and critique it then, but you know, we're giving both a shot, original and reboot. It's fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's fun, and I don't know if a reboot has ever truly worked out, but
yeah, I can't think of a reboot that's better than the original. But if you know, put it in the comments, give us an email. Yeah,
I'm sure there's some argument here and there, and we're talking about reboots of things that were popular. I'm sure you could probably find some obscure movie that they remade, but no one knew about the first one in the first place. I don't think that counts, but
yeah, the only maybe. The only thing I can think of off the top of my head is 10 Things I Hate About You is technically a reboot of Taming the Shrew, and I like 10 Things I Hate About You way more than I like Shakespeare, so I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, but it's hard to say you're rebooting Shakespeare, because Shakespeare is put on so many different ways.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Even on the stage, so yeah. Maybe that's their excuse for doing those horrible things. I mean, like, they even did it with Psycho. Are you crazy?
Oh.
What?
Yeah, as much as I like Vince Vaughn, that was the reboot was another example in the column of watch the original instead.
Yeah, I don't. So like Mikey said, we're basically against reboots for the most part, but we give it a shot on the reassumptions, because you never know, they might do it at some point.
You never know,
but we'll see. So we are doing the Red Dawn 1984 this week, and then next week we will do the Red Dawn. When was that one?
2014, I believe.
2014. Yeah, I get confused because I think it was filmed before, like way before it came out.
Yeah, it might be 2012, but
that one has a fun story, which we'll get into. But this one has a kind of fun story too. I don't know if you did like background of it, but I did a little background research.
Oh, late
on Red Dawn. So first, let me tell you where I'm coming from with 1984's Red Dawn. I doubt I saw it when it first came out in 1984 because I was 10, but I know I've seen this movie a lot. I must have rented it a lot, and I know all the other kids knew about it because every single one of us had a Red Dawn plan in the 80s.
Nice.
Because according to this movie, we all had to be ready to grab weapons and supplies and go out into the woods to avenge our fathers from the evil red invaders.
Yeah.
That was what it was like to be a kid in the 80s.
Because America's about to be taken over by foreign powers, yes.
Yes.
The 80s vibe for sure.
Yes. So it was kind of a well-known movie amongst the kid age group of the 80s. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of nostalgia goggles for it. And at the same time, I don't know why I rented it so much. It's interesting. It's the first PG-13 movie.
Yep.
Officially ever. Deservedly so, I would say.
Oh, for sure.
But some of the background stuff, did you know it was originally, like, the original script was called 10 Soldiers? And
okay.
It was supposed to be set in the near future. There was supposed to be, like, sci-fi elements to it. And it was supposed to be more like a Lord of the Flies.
Okay. I get that. Yeah.
And it was supposed to be decidedly an anti-war movie.
Okay.
And then what happened was, is that it got into the Hollywood machine and then got ripped to pieces, much like what happens, and given to an extremely pro-gun director to the point that, let's see, I have it in my notes over here.
John Milius, I think, is the name of the director.
Yeah, John Milius.
Yep.
He was signed to direct at a fee of $1.25 million plus a gun of his choice.
That was in his contract?
It's in his contract.
That's hilarious.
So it's kind of funny. It's basically what happened was, is that the Rambo movies with Sylvester Stallone were super popular and super huge hits. So they basically took this script, which was take on Lord of the Flies in the near future and kind of anti-war movie, and just Hollywood executive tore it apart and turned it into Rambo with teenagers.
That's exactly how it comes across. I believe it.
Go 80s.
Go Wolverines.
So what is Red Dawn, Mikey? Give them a little like up front. Well, if someone's like, what is Red Dawn?
What is Red Dawn? Well, I can do this because just a little backstory on my part. This is my first time watching this movie from top to bottom. I know it as the first official PG-13 movie, like we said. I'd prefer it go to Indiana Jones, but technically Red Dawn gets it. But this is my first time watching it, and Red Dawn is essentially, I guess, it's America's Hollywood response to the Cold War. Like, everybody's worried about foreign invaders. That's the 80s fright of the time. And yep. This is a movie that says, what if that actually happened? It's cool to hear that it started out as an anti-war movie, but the end product is anything but, because this is this is all war all the time. They go through the entire cycle. But essentially, we are focused in a small town in Colorado. I forget the specific name of it, but it is, you know.
Calumet, I believe. I think it might be fictional.
Yeah, Calumet, Colorado, which is essentially the stand-in for all, flyover state towns, you know, the little small town. And Russians invade. And spoiler alert, Cubans invade with them. But Russians invade, and it's essentially World War III from the scope of a group of high school students.
Yes, and I'm telling you what, so here's the thing, the part of the Hollywood machine, for sure, is that, okay, we want to make Rambo for teenagers. Rambo's got Sylvester Stallone, who's huge in it. We have to get huge teenagers, and boy, did they get huge teenagers. This is like the murderer's row of 80s teen faces. I mean, let's go down the list. Yep. What we got? We got, of course, Swayze is the head guy. He's actually supposed to have graduated from high school, but still.
Your pick for the jock on our bunker crew. An excellent pick.
Yeah. Yep. Patrick Swayze. We got C. Thomas Howell. Leia Thompson.
Oh.
Marty McFly's mom.
Yep.
Charlie Sheen with his very young tiger blood. Jennifer Grey, who was with Charlie Sheen in that scene in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, true.
Right? And then Darren Dalton and Brad Savage, who weren't really... I mean, they're recognizable,
yes,
but they're not the previous group we mentioned.
And it's not part of the teen group, but I do have to say Powers Booth is also a main player in this, just because I love, that's the perfect actor name. Powers Booth, he's going to get the job done, but he's one of the older people in the movie. So.
Yes. Harry Dean Stanton is in this movie. You got, like you said, Powers Booth.
Yep.
Ben Johnson. I mean, there's a ton of character actors in here that when you see them, you're like, oh, it's that guy.
Yep.
So it's a Hollywood movie for sure. It's got Hollywood money behind it. It's Hollywood backed. It's got big stars at the time in it.
Mm-hmm.
It made its money back and then some. And it is I will say this movie is very 80s. It is very Ronald Reagan's the president. And you know what I mean?
I agree with you. It is 80s all the way through. It's massive explosions. It's practical effects. Oh, it's great.
Right. So let's get into it. What Mikey and I like to do is, and this is definitely spoiler territory, but we kind of just use the structure of the movie. So we just kind of go through the acts of the movie and then so we can kind of comment on stuff that hit us while we watched it. So it's easier for us to do it that way than jumping all over the place.
Yep, yep.
So we'll explain the movie a little bit as we go, I guess. So if you haven't seen it, then we'll definitely be spoiling stuff because we'll get kind of specific because we'll assume that you might not know what we're talking about. But we kind of talk like we're sitting in front of it watching it almost.
Yeah. So go watch it because it's a fun time.
Yeah. All right. So like we said, first movie with a PG-13 rating. And as Mikey said, it's basically the communists invade the United States. So it starts off and we talked about it a little bit in our last podcast. It starts off with Jed Eckert, Patrick Swayze, dropping his brother, mm-hmm. who's played by Charlie Sheen, and one of his buddies. Is that C. Thomas Howell? Is he the one who's in there with him or someone else?
No, it's C. Thomas Howell, but...
Is it? Okay.
This is where I'm going to point out, this is Charlie Sheen's first credited movie, which is... I had
it
no
is? Idea.
It is. He's uncredited in two things before it, but technically this is his first movie. It's crazy.
Wow. Actually, I think... I don't think it's C. Thomas Howell with him. I think it might be Aardvark who's with them.
Oh, maybe.
By Doug Tobey. Anyway,
yep.
Well, here's the problem. You know what? One of the problems with this movie, and I'm going to come up and say it right at this front. The character development is so shallow. These characters are so just like little cutouts that the only way I can tell them apart is by their famous face.
I get it.
It's like, if you ask me to, like, what other than Jed Eckert, because I know it from what we just did, if you're like, what's the name of that character? I'd be like, Charlie Sheen, Leia Thompson,
C. Thomas
Jennifer
Howell.
Gray.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm with you. So, the only reason I could tell the characters apart is because they do the 80s thing. Like, every time they address another character, they have to say that person's name. But if they didn't say that name, you would never know. It's just like, high school kid number two, tell high school kid number three to do this.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of character development. They try a little bit, and it's kind of funny when you read about, there's a lot written about this movie because it was very controversial at the time and continues to be a little bit controversial, but I think it's so old now. What, this movie's like 36 years old?
Oh, don't say that number. That's going to make people feel old, but you're correct.
Yeah, it is. So I think it's kind of, a lot of that has sloughed off because so much has happened. But back then, there was a lot of controversy over this film, just like there's controversy over Rambo and stuff. There was a group that didn't like the shoot 'em up carnage count type films that were popular at the time, but this is one of them. And those movies are always just, the characters are paper thin. It's all about the explosions and the guns, and and apparently, just like with all these movies, when the actors got the script was much deeper, had way more character development, and then they see it at the premiere and they're like, what happened to the movie I was in? So there's a lot of fun like interviews from this era of people like Powers Booth and Leia Thompson and the A-list stars who are in it at the time saying like, yeah, it didn't really turn out what I was, you know. This was, my character was supposed to be a little more like this, and it just didn't. So
I get it.
Because I guess the Powers Booth character was written to be very like anti-war.
Okay.
And you can kind of see where it might have been.
Yes.
And I definitely saw it in this viewing because I've seen it so many times. I could really kind of dig in. And I was like, after seeing that he was interviewed, that his character was supposed to be kind of the anti-war character, I was like, oh, I can see where that would have been.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get to him anyway. So the way this starts off is so iconic to me. You get a little banter. There's a banter between brothers about like, I used to be the football star and you lost the game and ha ha ha. And oh, isn't this a nice wholesome American middle of America thing.
Yep.
And then they're in class and the kids are, it's funny. The teacher's talking about Genghis Khan, right?
And conquering techniques, yeah.
Yeah, and conquering techniques. And the kids are sitting there. And it's actually, I'm going to say, this was actually good. So overall, like as we're saying, you got some paper-thin characters. But at the same time, this is still a Hollywood movie. Yes. It's got A-list stars in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's good casting. So the acting in this movie isn't bad at all. And I noticed this right away in the fact that the teacher this is good as a teacher in the class. And you can tell he's a good teacher by the way he's acting. And you can tell that the kids are interested, but not like overly interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes you watch stuff and you're like, either they go one of two ways sometimes. Sometimes the kids are way too interested, like Boy Meets World.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? Or they're just like totally like so disinterested in making paper airplanes and stuff. You're like, I have never seen a teacher who would put up with that in my life.
Yeah.
So they're both unrealistic.
We mentioned Ferris Bueller, but that's Ben Stein all day long. He's just calling out Bueller's name and everybody's not paying attention to him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which is usually played for comedy. But I was like, hey, man, this class looks like a realistic class.
But only and for then, about 30 seconds.
Yeah, because then we start seeing the paratroopers dropping down on the football field.
This movie moves so fast. Like, that is the opening scene. Like, all right, Patrick Swayze's dropping off his brothers. We're talking about football. Let's go to class. And then immediately, uh-oh, here comes Russia.
Exactly. Exactly. And at first, he thinks that it's American soldiers who are way off course.
Yep.
And so the teacher's like, I'm going to go see what's going on out here. And he's like, hey, guys, I think you're in the wrong. And then, of course, apparently Russian military doctrine, which I don't think this is real. I don't think it ever was real. As much as we didn't like the Soviets and as much trouble as the Russians get in our media and stuff now, I really don't think their military doctrine is just start using up all your ammunition. Because as soon as he gets within a few feet of the Russian guy, he gets machine gunned down.
Yep.
There goes the teacher. And then he stands up and is like, I'll just blow away this entire classroom through the window here.
Yeah, who needs that school bus? See you later. Yep.
Yeah, and the next thing you know, they're just shooting RPGs into the school and just... And I'm like, it is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Because, I mean, come on, man. I'm pretty sure that... I'm kind of a military history buff myself.
Yep.
Because I play tabletop war games and that's what us nerds do. and usually when paratroopers come down, they have a set objective and usually they don't care about any civilians unless the civilians are shooting at them.
Yes.
And they'll secure the objectives. And when you're a paratrooper, you only have so much ammunition because you're not carrying a lot. They have to travel light. They're light and quick and light and fast.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't just start shooting up random stuff. The threat of getting shot is enough. And secure the school. They'd get them all lined, They probably like, instead of shooting an RPG into the gym, they probably like just put them all in the gym, something like that, you know?
Yeah, because they have a different...
Secure the objective.
They have a different objective, absolutely.
Right, and the objective usually isn't like, comrades, once you land, just start shooting everyone, you know?
Everybody's the enemy. And really, teacher's only fault was he started speaking American to him, so I guess that's the reason to take him out? I don't know.
I know. Okay, well, there you go. But, you got the chaos of everyone running around, and for some reason, it's so funny to me, Jed, like, dropped him off at school.
Yep.
And then I supposedly he was driving off to work or whatever. And then suddenly he's there to like get to like save them from the Russian who was randomly shooting the car up, you know,
in his super American pickup truck. Absolutely. He saves the day.
It was really funny to me because it was like, so I don't know. There's so many times. There's a time later, too, where I'll tell you there's so many times where it's like, I guess that's what was scary to people in the 80s. I mean, I was a kid, so I wasn't rational at all.
Yep.
But I guess that what was scary is that they were just going to come down and do that, just start shooting up everything, where that's just not how militaries act. There's other times in it where they're totally running around. There's like no squad tactics. They're like running around random. There's like a scene later where they're like fighting in the town and there's that American helicopter flying around.
Yep.
And they're just running around like it looks like a riot is going on. It does not look like a military operation at all. It looks like there's a riot in the town and like it's a police helicopter or something, basically. It was crazy to me.
It's like we're going to take over America, but oh, we forgot how big America is. And it's kind of weird, but this is what we're going with.
We forgot basic squad tactics.
And for me, this is my first time watching it, and I know it is a movie from the 80s, but they never really, like, I guess it's a modern thing to give you sort of context and exposition, because you see the Russian paratroopers come down, and it's like they're taking over this small town, and I guess you're just supposed to assume that it's happening in all other places in the world, you know? But it really just comes across as these Russians are really mad at this Colorado high school, and they want to take it out, you know? So,
yeah, no, it's true. It's true.
I mean, they have that. They have all those panels at the beginning, which explains the backstory of like how we got here. With and then later on, when Powers Booth does a whole exposition of like, it's like he, there's kind of like a how it started and how it's going, right?
But it's the 80s, so you only get 10 seconds for both of it. Like that's all. That's all the exposition you get. It's like here's what's happening, and we're going. Okay, next scene.
Yeah. How it started, how it's going. So they pick up a whole bunch of their friends in the pickup truck along the way and then immediately head off to this service station that just also happens to be a weapons supply store.
It's run by a prepper dad. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's so conveniently had everything they needed there.
Yeah, and the dad the place is like, take all the weapons you need, take all the food, you're going up to the woods, I already know what's happening, and here's your bug out bags, like, get ready and go. It's like, what?
It was funny, because the funny thing is that what happened there makes more sense today with the guys who are preppers than it did back in 1984, because I don't remember anybody being that way in 1984.
Nope.
I don't remember anybody being like that at all. I'm serious.
Yep.
Because, I mean, America was high on the hog in the 80s. It was like the Wall Street times. I'm talking about the movie Wall Street. You know, everyone, it was like guys in Armani suits with slick back hair. And America was high on the hog at the time. No one was like, oh, we need to be prepared for the worst, other than us kids who saw Red Dawn and be like, that's totally going to happen.
That's going to happen tomorrow. No, it was the 80s. We're rolling in money and illicit drugs. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of funny that I think maybe in today's eyes, you'd see that and be like, oh, yeah, that right there. Like the preppers be like, that guy right there. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But it's kind of ridiculous in the 80s for like them. He just conveniently had everything they need. Yep. Okay. Yep. I was expecting this to happen. That's why. Imagine walking into that gas station. So imagine you're just like traveling through Colorado, right? You're on your way to like ski or the Rocky Mountains or something. And you're like, oh, I'm running out of gas. Oh, there's one. Where are we? Calumet? Okay. You know, and then you pull in and you walk into the, you're like, I'm going to go get a Coke. And you walk in there and you're like, man, there's a lot of guns in here.
It would be more appropriate for the start of a horror movie than an action movie.
I know. I mean, I've seen gun stores.
Yes.
And I've seen convenience stores. But I've never really seen the gun convenience store.
That's Colorado for you, baby. Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. And sporting goods, too. He had everything.
He did. Yeah.
Winter jackets, everything.
And enough to tell five high school teenagers, be like, go nuts, take whatever you need and come back when you need it. See you, have fun out in the woods.
Oh, man. It is funny. I've been planning this forever.
I knew the Russians were coming. Here they come.
So that was, now I'm looking at my notes, that was Robert's father. So Robert is C. Thomas Howell. So let's see Thomas Howell's father
who
ran the gun / sporting goods / gas station.
Yep.
Which are common all over Colorado.
and I guess God bless his dad, because I mean, he's part of the reason the whole movie continues. It's just these boys are prepared, they can go up into the woods and they're all set to go for the next stage. I mean,
and don't forget, they took a football, and they made sure to show you that they took a football.
And they play football later just to show you, hey, they take some time off. Oh, 80s.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And so they grab all the stuff, and they're fleeing, and then everything's going shoot them up. It's, like you said, they're not going to waste too much time at all, because here they're going, and then, oh, no, there's a roadblock. What are they going to do? Well, here's an army helicopter from our army to help with the roadblock, and they took a few shots in the radiator and the water ran out, so he had to fix it. And they're like, we don't have any water. And I'm like, you didn't grab any water while you're in there? And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. It's 1984.
Yes.
I don't think they had bottled water.
Oh, really?
Not in like those plastic Ozarka bottles. I don't think we did.
They didn't have those pallets you can get in Costco for sure. I'm with you.
I don't think they did.
Yeah.
I mean, they took like Cokes and like they had like what people drank out of cans back then.
Tab.
Yeah. But now that I think about it, I can't remember bottled water really until like the 90s.
Oh, that's interesting. I believe it though.
I mean, I remember there was like Poland Spring sparkling water and stuff like that in bottles, but I don't remember just like bottled water.
But you would think that the prepper dad would at least have like a spare gas can full of water, like marked water, maybe. I don't know. But
well, I mean, when I was a kid, you'd have a canteen.
Oh, that's true.
But whatever. Anyway, the problem was they needed water for the radiator, so one of them came up with a great idea to urinate in it.
Yeah. Pee in it. It's going to fix it.
Yeah, which was so random.
But that's part of the 80s. Like, you got to prove that you're part of the group. Pee in our truck, and you can stay with us when we go into the woods. Okay.
So random to me. That was so random to me. And it was also funny to me that the dad, he was like, I'll stay here. Have fun camping.
Yeah. I'm going to hold down that fort. It's not too serious. It's just Russians invading. See you all later. Yeah.
See you later. Have fun camping. It was so weird. Wasn't that weird? That really strikes me. Like, why didn't you go with them?
Yeah. You know what's going down. You have all the supplies. Why not join them? Especially.
I think he did say, I'll come find you later.
Oh, that's true. I guess he was holding down the fort.
So, yeah, he probably had to go get his wife, and then that didn't turn out well for him. So maybe I just explained it to myself. Okay, it's fine now. It still was funny that he was kind of like, have fun camping.
And it's even weirder still because they go off camping, and this is our next point, but while they're hunting and all that stuff and bonding in the woods, we immediately jump, like this movie goes from the Russians are landing to now this Colorado town is occupied, like... It's just occupation rather than fighting. It's so crazy.
Oh, yeah, because it went from, like, you have that scene where they grab the stuff and they get past the roadblock because of the Army helicopter, and then they're up in the woods, and you have, like, what was left of the Lord of the Flies scenes,
okay.
Basically.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, oh, that's where it fits in.
It was the one little tidbit that was left where basically I think we should go back, and I'm not going back, and let's have a fist fight and gorillas beating their chests. You know what I mean?
But you have your pick for the bunker crew. Patrick Swayze stands up and is like, no, we're Wolverines. We got to fight. I'm a high school pro football player, and we don't give up. The game's not over.
The other kid's like, as school president, didn't he say that? It was really funny.
Yeah.
It's like, sit down,
nerd. We're not giving up.
As school president. And I couldn't get past C. Thomas Howell had a Star Wars hat.
Oh, he did. I thought that was a nice subtle nod because I guess Spielberg had more to do with the PG-13 Indiana Jones than he had to do with this movie, I guess. But it was a nice sort of nod to him, you know, that sort of crew be like, hey, we recognize what you're doing, but we're doing our own thing.
I was like, Star Wars hat. He has a Star Wars hat. That's awesome.
I will say also as a hipster, those 80s jackets, the winter jackets with the stripes on them, I wish those would come back because, man, those are so sharp looking. I would take one in a heartbeat. Oh.
I noticed the jackets too. I noticed that they had like, I was like, oh, a bunch of them the same jackets because they all grabbed them from the store.
Oh, that makes sense. So, there you go.
Yeah. There's like, this movie doesn't have like the badness in it that bad movies have because it's a major Hollywood AAA movie or whatever you want to call it. So it has, they hire, what are they called? What are those people called who make sure the stuff's consistent between shots?
Continuity experts is what I'm going with.
Yes. Yes. No. Yeah. No. That is called the continuity director or person or they have continuity people on these major Hollywood things. Well, they'll do stuff like they'll take Polaroid pictures when they say cut.
Yeah,
to make sure everything is right. So that's really that little tiny stuff like that, having like hair people, specific makeup people, specific lighting people, specific continuity people. that's the only thing really that separates the Hollywood movies from some of these movies that had more potential but are kind of bad.
I got you.
Because they didn't do it because they didn't have someone who was thinking of it. So they have someone who's thinking of it like, oh, they shouldn't all have different jackets because they pulled these jackets from the store.
Yeah, yeah.
So the store's only going to have like two kinds of jackets. And that's what they have is two kinds of jackets.
And they do that thing where they're like running out of canned food and they have, you know, hunted meat, but they actually talk about how, you know, they only have limited supplies. So I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Then the next scene after that is the scene I was talking about that looks like a riot in town, the most disorganized army ever. There's like a U.S. Army helicopter flying over town and shooting at the Russians / Cuban troops. Yep. And they're barely taking cover. They're just running around the streets, shooting in the air. It's like it looks like a riot or like a general uprising. Yeah. And that really threw me. I was like, maybe they didn't have the military advisor on staff or whatever, because there was guys just walking around randomly. Yeah, it looked like what you would see in like an insurgency or something, just like with guerrillas.
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
Guerrilla warfare type stuff. And they weren't supposed to be that. They were supposed to be a regular army. They were Russian and Cuban, like regular army guys, not guerrillas, not paramilitary.
Nope.
So they shouldn't have just been running, walking, strolling around the streets, just randomly shooting their AK-47s into the air as the helicopters. I mean, it's ridiculous to me.
I guess they have to match it up because the stars of this movie are high school kids. So I guess you got to make the foreign enemy that's invading, you got to make them somewhat bumbling so that the high school kids have a chance. Because that also explains why the paratroopers came down and just expended all their ammo. You know, like that was step one. And the last step in their plan is like, all right, we're going to land in America and just take it over. Okay, go. It's like, no, wait.
Yeah. And then as you said, the next scene, right from there, it's like town's being fought over by the mob. The next scene is they're like, they go there and they're like, hey, all the stores are open. Everything's fine. We should go and see what's going on in town.
Yeah, people are walking around. Maybe it's over.
Yeah. And then, of course, they go in there and like immediately, they had like all the posters up, and I specifically remember seeing one that said, "A new man arises from the ashes of capitalism." And it has all the cool, I think it's cool looking. Trust me, I'm an American and I love our country and our flag, but I think that kind of Art Deco,
yes,
Russian propaganda poster stuff that they were using in this movie, which I think the Russians stopped using in the 50s, but whatever. It's cool looking to me, and that's what they had up.
It's Hollywood 80s. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's Hollywood 80s, and also reminded me of, like, video games.
Oh, for sure. But I'm with you. No, so, that propaganda is striking even to this day, and yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, okay, so, like you said, is this supposed to be, like, 24 hours? They just secured the town and got their banners up?
Yep. You're now occupied. Good job.
Yeah. I think there's supposed to be more time in between there, but we didn't see it or didn't know it.
Yeah, no, the only title cards we get little monthly title cards. I think we start in September and end in January for this movie, but that's the only time markers we get. It says like September, October, November, December, and then whatever happens between that is somehow justified.
It's really funny. I'm looking at the synopsis that I pulled down offline, mm-hmm. and it says, after several weeks in the forest, they sneak back into town. And it's like, you're right. There's like no indication that they were in the forest for like several weeks.
No, this movie spends no time developing characters. This movie spends no time giving you exposition or context. It's just like, here's what's happening. Pay attention. We got another hour to go. Like, I thought right. This movie was halfway through when it was like 20 minutes in. I was like, what is happening?
And then one an iconic part and a favorite part to me, and it's in its silliness, but the part where they find out that their dad is in a re-education camp.
Yep.
So they go to the re-education camp to find their dad.
And just hang out by that chain link fence, never marked by a guard in the 10 minutes that scene takes place. Yes.
I know, right? Right. It's at the old drive-in, and at the drive-in on the drive-in screen, they're having like, you know, like, you are wrong about us.
Yeah. We're Russians are good. America, yes. Bad.
It looks like a post-apocalyptic, like, fallout scene inside there with like just a big bonfire. They try to make them look like these insurgent barbarians. I'm pretty sure the Russians are a little more organized than that.
Yes.
But yes, you're right. There's a double chain link fence and they go and they're like, hey, where's our dad? And yeah, never a like a Russian spotlight, nope. Never a guard. Because you know why there's two chain link fences? Because a guard with a dog like will walk in between the two fences.
Yeah, you have a sentry making the rounds. Absolutely.
Yes. And never shows up, but never. Whatever.
But so, we do get that touching dad scene, like, everybody you know is dead except for me and a few other people, but I raised you right.
I was tough on you. Now you know why.
Oh, such an 80s dad moment. It's like, yeah, I may have been a bad dad and I raised you wrong, but I prepared you for this American invasion. So, haha, good luck.
Yeah. And then when he's leaving, we get the best line ever.
Avenge me.
Avenge me.
Oh. Avenge me.
It's so touching. It's so wonderful, but like it happens, it's 30 seconds long and there's nothing before it or after it. Like you're just supposed to care and be like, okay, I will avenge you. Wait, why?
I know.
Who are you?
That's the funny thing. Like I said before, it is not poorly acted.
True.
At all.
Not at all.
It's well acted. You can tell it's like you're sitting there going like, oh man, I'm really touched right now. But I don't have to. They don't give you time to get there.
True.
It's what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's so fast paced. It was like, it's like, okay, here's this touching moment. Are you touched? Good. Moving on.
Yep. We got to get to the next scene. Hurry up. All right. Emotional moment achieved. Let's go back to the explosions and the gunfire.
Yes. So, okay. So the next thing you know, and again, this is another comes out of nowhere. They show up at some old couple's house.
Yep.
Out in the woods. And apparently you're like, okay, they know these people. Sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Why not? It's Colorado. It's a small town. It's believable.
Yeah. And it's like, the lady's like, let me bring you some cornbread and cocoa. And this is where you get a tiny little bit of like what's going on in the world.
True. Yeah. Because they've been keeping an eye on things, the old couple.
Yeah. So they give you a little bit more of what's going on. And then they give him a radio that he had in the freezer, I guess. It was strange.
It was like a leftover lasagna little like meal package thing. It was bizarre.
Right? He was hiding it.
So the Russian, so the commies couldn't find it.
Yeah. And then he also says, I have something else to give you. These two girls.
Yeah, some precious cargo. Oh, by the way, you have to take care of this for me. It's not gold bars. It's not extra ammunition. It's two girls. Hiding in the basement.
Because you have to hide the women from the Russians because they're going to take advantage of all of them because I guess that's because what they did at the end of World War II. So that's what they're doing now again.
Yeah.
So
it's occupied territory now. They're no longer fighting. Now they're just pillaging and taking the women.
Right. And they don't care about my old wife. I don't know why. Why is he hiding? Why aren't they just in the house? Like, I don't understand.
I only have the Hollywood defense in that the two women that is his precious cargo are Leah Thompson and Jennifer Grey. So I kind of understand that, you know, you want to protect those two. They're wonderful.
They are wonderful. And here's a little tiny thing that has nothing to do with anything, but I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
Yep.
He gives them, and we're going to blow through this because they're blowing through it. He gives them horses. As well.
Oh, that's true.
And at one point, Leah Thompson's standing there, and I think it's Swayze, maybe. I forget. One of them reaches down to her, and one fell swoop pulls her up onto the back of the horse with him.
That's right.
It was the coolest. I was like, hey, man, that was awesome looking. I know it's a little dumb thing, but it was acrobatic and cool. And I was like, how much did they work on that one?
Oh, I believe it. And for as fast as this movie goes through things, it's that little scene to show you, hey, the Wolverines aren't messing around. Like, they know how to hunt. They know how to kill. They know how to drink deer blood. And they also know how to pull up a chick on the back of a horse in one fell swoop. It makes sense. It's Patrick Swayze. I mean, there's a reason you picked him for a jock. He's the best. So they take the two girls. Now they have their precious cargo and they go back up to the woods and I guess hide out again until the Russians come, which I guess eventually happens, obviously, because this is the movie.
Yeah, that we kind of get the moment where they decide that they're no longer just kids hiding out in the woods. Mm-hmm. And it's when some Russians come up to, because I guess they're staying in the Arapahoe National Forest, I guess, because it said that on the sign.
Yep.
And three Russians come up to do some sightseeing, which, dude, this is the first, no, this is like the first believable thing
I believe
in this movie as far as how the Russians are acting. Instead, like just randomly running around like, you know, the Keystone Cops.
Like a riot. Yep.
Yeah, this is literally what happens once you've occupied a place. There's a garrison of troops there occupying it, and they get bored, so they actually will sightsee. It's a very common thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So they go up to sightsee, and I guess the girls were out hunting with bows,
yep.
And one of the guys finds an arrow, and he thinks it's like a Native American arrow, and they're like, the thing's made out of plastic, you moron.
Yeah, it's so funny because there's the, like, they show that they're in the Arapahoe National Forest because that big, like, sign placard thing. And yeah. It's funny because they have one, the, I guess, the lower officer translate it. And the sign says, like, welcome to Arapahoe National Forest. We've got 65,000 acres of trees. This was founded by Teddy Roosevelt, blah, blah, blah. All the, like, just information. But the young Russian troop translated as, this is Teddy Roosevelt's last stand. Like, he vanquished a whole bunch of Native Americans, and this was a huge battleground. And look at these arrows that are all around. And they're like, nope, these arrows are plastic and metal. I don't think they had this in that time.
Yep. But then one of the girls accidentally knocks some rocks down, slides down the hill, and oh, they've been made.
Oh, no.
And then, of course, the Russians are like, girls, I can't control myself.
Go after them. That's our treasure.
Yeah. Which leads to some Russian murder. And then next thing you know, the Wolverines as a resistance group are born. First Blood.
Yes.
Part teen.
Teen Rambo. Yes. Teen Rambo. First yes. Blood. Yes.
Yes.
But that brings them together. It causes some strife. But it's also the first example of Jennifer Grey and Leah Thompson. This is a prop to this movie, but they do really strong female characters in this movie. And that's the first example of that. It's just that, like, they know they're being attacked and they stand up for themselves. Oh, thumbs up.
That's true. It's true. Speaking of which, tangent here, this goes for the whole movie. Did they determine, was, like, Jennifer Grey on the track team or something? They always made her do any of the get from here to there quick things.
Yeah, she was definitely the scout and the, like, plant the bomb and then the rest of the plan will happen. Absolutely.
But she was, like, the runner. She was, like, anytime you had a scout or run, I don't know. I guess we missed the scene where she was like, I ran cross country. I'll do it.
She's a fit female and she's spry. You believe it. They don't explain anything in this movie and they don't need to explain it because...
They don't explain anything.
They don't. So, but you believe it if it's Jennifer Grey. You would buy her as the, I don't know what they call that, but whoever is the person that sneaks in first and makes first contact or plants the start of the plan, like, that's her. She's the scout. Yeah. She's the bait.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to say.
Oh, man. And somewhere in between here, we get, I can't remember the context, but we get the famous Patrick Swayze don't cry scene. And the reason why I say it's famous is because I know countless soundboards of radio shows and stuff have used him saying, don't cry!
It's it was their dad's final message, the bad 80s dad. He raised them wrong, but he raised them right, and he said, don't ever cry again. Yeah. You're in war
don't
now.
Don't cry!
But it bonds them. It brings the Wolverines together. Oh, they have the cool handshake and everything.
They had their Wolverine handshake and all this kind of stuff. But it's right after this where we get the introduction of the wonderful late great Powers Booth.
Yes. Andy Tanner is the, or Lieutenant, or I forget.
Lieutenant Colonel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lieutenant Colonel Andy Tanner, who's a fighter pilot who has a line that I remember from seeing this as a kid, a line that has always stuck with me for some reason. It makes me gets a little smile every time I say it. It's not the avenge me thing, which is a little melodramatic. It's not the don't cry, which has just become kind of a meme.
Is it when he's putting on his hat? Oh, no.
No. Oh. It's when Swayze first shows up. Like, Swayze and his, I guess, his brother or someone else were out hunting or whatever.
Yep.
And they come back to find him there.
Yep.
And Swayze's kind of like, well, why'd you get shot down? And Powers Booth goes, it was 5-1. I got 4 of them.
Yeah.
I always love that line. I don't know why.
it's no nonsense. It sets up the character perfectly, like especially in this movie, because we aren't saying anything. Everybody gets one line to do character development, and you know, oh, it was 5 versus 1, and I got 4 of them, so why not? Absolutely.
Well, here's the thing, too, that this is what got cut out of the movie. This is something Powers Booth and Leah Thompson both talked about. Throughout this whole thing, it comes across as Leah Thompson has this weird puppy love for Powers Booth.
Yep, there is a triangle going on there.
But there was an actual, like, love scene in there.
What?
That was cut out.
Okay.
And it was cut out because they were like, ew, he's, like, married and old and she's, like, a teenager or something.
I guess they figured they had to include it because it is 80s Hollywood, but I guess I thumbs up on cutting it out because this is an action movie. We got no time for romance.
So, but that was supposedly one of the reason why Leah Thompson was like, I'll do it, because she was like, oh, this is going to give me, I don't know, whatever. Sorry, it got cut out. No time for it. So it just comes across as her having weird puppy love the whole time.
Yeah, because like we were talking about how they specifically showed that they took a football, and it comes up later when they're playing football in the field that Leah Thompson and Andy Tanner are having a little moment. But that's the only moment they have. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Cut out.
It was cut out. But the Lieutenant Colonel does some good things. He explains what's been going on. He says where's that, why everything wasn't nuked, because they have to explain that away.
Yep.
And sure, whatever. None of it seems 100% plausible, but whatever. Basically, they came up through Mexico, and and they did a tactic they did with when they invaded Afghanistan. And,
oh, yep.
And then, for some reason, China was on our side back then. That doesn't make any sense, but whatever.
It's the 80s.
So,
but
anyway.
But Tanner is the one that also helps them. Like, he, as much as the prepper dad gave them all the supplies for them to go out in the forest, Tanner is now the new character that gives them all the strategy to let them know how they, you know, how we finish out this movie, how they take over the Russians as the group of Wolverines.
That was one funny part in there when he's going over the plan to take over. For some reason at the drive-in, there's the Russians also put a base right next to it. Again, none of this makes any sense. They have like airplanes, whatever. Okay, fine, whatever, movie. But there is one funny moment where he's like going over the plan and he's using all these military terms like flank and defilade fire and stuff.
Yep.
And then he's like, pretty easy, huh? And he goes, or simple enough. And all the kids are like, what's defilade fire? What's a flank?
What's a flank? Yeah.
It's funny. It's funny.
Oh, it's good. It's lighthearted.
Yes. But then they turn into Wolverines and then it just turns it up to Rambo 11.
And here is, I'll bring this up. This is one of Mikey's biggest complaints about this movie, because so far we've been moving at a real quick pace. I'm with that. You don't have to explain it to me. I'll pick it up as we're going along. But this is where the shift happens in the movie, in that they had their Campbell soup, they have their deer meat, but all of a sudden, like, it's now wintertime and they have full, like, white gear, like military surplus and explosives and grenades. Like, where did that come from?
It came from them fighting all the Russians that we never saw at first.
They're coming up from bunker holes and traps that they dug somehow, like, in between scenes. Like, I get the level up, but when did this happen?
You're right. It's because they met Powers Booth. They met the Lieutenant Colonel.
Fair enough. He's powerful enough to inspire them to do all the cool military stuff.
They level them up, and they have those awesome Hollywood grenades that blow up way too big. That's the funny thing about Hollywood grenades. Huh. Grenades barely blow up.
True. Grenades blow up planes. They blow up like base houses. Yes. I don't know if this is later or right now, but there is one scene where Powers Booth throws a grenade into an airplane or a fighter jet.
The pilot's
just sitting there like waiting for it to go off. Like, oh, I guess this is me. All right, see you later. And then massive flames. So crazy.
It is. That's the 80s grenade, or even movie grenade. Most movies, almost all movies even to this day, do grenades wrong.
Oh, I believe grenades. It.
Grenades blow up a disappointing amount. They're horribly devastating, and they work really good, but they don't blow up the way Hollywood likes them to blow up.
Yeah, because they're mostly concussive, right? It's not like a visual display. It's more just like a physics thing.
No, Yeah, it's just it's like a it's a pop and smoke and little pieces go everywhere and it doesn't look like much, but it they hurt. So
Hollywood said, add more fire. And
yes,
John Milia said, OK, more fire.
And this also is too the only parts that are really slow and seem to have any character development at all are the parts with like the Cuban commander.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, the most well-developed character in this movie is the Cuban commander.
And like I think we only get 3 or 4 scenes where there's like subtitled for the foreign enemies. And a lot of it takes place with that Cuban commander, and all of their conversations are just about, are you with us? Or are you against us? Do you want to take out these Americans or not? Like, that's all it is, but it shows how ruthless they are. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, it's basically like the Russians are like advisors to the Cuban commander and his troops, basically.
Yep.
And he's disappointed with the way everything's going always. Whoever plays that Russian guy, he looks like a 1930s like horror movie villain or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's the stand-in for Boris Karloff or something.
Yeah, so he's always disappointed in the Cuban commander, and the Cuban commander is like, I'm doing my best over here, and he's getting kind of discouraged. But I will tell you, the Cuban commander has some really cool 80s pimp sunglasses.
Oh, absolutely, he's Cuban. He's got those the ex embargo sunglasses. Yeah,
he's got like the cartel guy's sunglasses. It's just
and the fancy cigars. Oh, he fits it to a T. Yes.
So anyway, they're disappointed in the way stuff is going with these Wolverine insurgents. So they bring in the Russian special forces, which are the Spetsnaz.
Yep.
Because I'm a military history buff, I recognize because they have those blue and white striped undershirts.
Oh, okay.
They're basically like, I think they might be Marines of some kind. Anyway, they're Russian special forces guys. And then they come up to get the Wolverines, and the Wolverines like just take them out. It's like, forget about it. You know, this is how awesome we are. You're done.
Yeah. We have Tanner on our side now. We know everything we need to do right. Here it goes.
Oh man. It's crazy. I think before is it before that where they try and get Powers Booth back to the American lines and that goes wrong?
That's right before that, yes.
So that's right before the Russians come up, the special forces come up. Right. So before that, we start losing our first characters. Spoiler. We've been spoiling everything anyway. And so apparently the front line is walking distance from where they are.
Because of course it is.
So they're going there to which partisan groups used to do, they try and get down pilots back to their lines so they could fight more, which is fine. It would happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made 100% sense, but they get caught in the middle of a tank battle, which goes all Rambo on them. and they lose one of their guys, and they lose Powers Booth, and it's all crazy. For a second, Powers Booth is like, go ahead and come with me over on the other side. And he's like, I can't do that because my dad said avenge me, and I got to avenge him.
Yep.
But he never says
avenge me.
He never says it. He just says, I can't do that, basically, at the end.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to know why.
You're supposed to know why. Absolutely. Yeah. That's the whole reason for this movie. You're supposed to know why.
You're supposed to know why. So anyway, he doesn't make it, of course, because tanks. but I still don't. I guess he doesn't want to link up because they'll be like, okay, kid, the war's over for you. But they're a successful partisan group, so it seems like you could just kind of work with them or whatever. I don't know. There's part of this movie that didn't happen that they, I'm not saying it was written to happen, but it was mentioned to him.
Mm-hmm.
They went and saw the old man and his wife again at like Christmas time or whatever.
They had decorations up in their hideout. So weird. Yeah. Anyway.
And he said that in the spring, they're talking about dropping special forces to you. And he's like, spring's long way away. And that's whatever.
Yeah. But, the Green Berets, I think they mentioned.
Yeah. But I was like, how awesome would that movie be if you had some like special forces link up with them at some point?
Oh, it'd be perfect. It'd make way more sense than just a high school team of a high school football team takes over Russia. But
well, that's one of the funny things too that I was reading. One of the critiques of this movie that I was reading.
Yes,
when they we talked about it earlier, but when they did the thing where they invaded the
Friendship Center, no,
the military base / movie theater. I mean, outdoor.
Yeah.
Movie theater,
yeah.
Drive-in movie theater, outdoor movie theater, drive-in movie theater / military base. They have a truck full of like weapons that they've captured, I assume, and they're handing it out to everybody that's there, and not a single one of those people joins them.
Oh, that's true.
And that was a big critique. And when I read that critique, I was like, that does make so much sense. Those people would have just gone on the truck with them, then you would have like doubled, tripled your numbers,
yeah,
maybe, and then have a whole bunch of adults with you to help you fight. But whatever.
No,
they just, I don't know where did all those people go with the guns? Where did they go?
They can't fight their own. They know the Wolverines. They can't go against the Wolverines.
They had to go start another partisan group.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had to go start the Eagles or the Rams or some other high school football team name.
Yeah.
Okay. That was one thing that made me go, wait, you're right. They gave out all kinds of guns to all kinds of people. And then even in Fallout 4, you get people and arm them and they man your base for you.
Yeah, because they know, like, if this is World War III, if this is in fact the end times, absolutely people are going to join up with the strongest force. I mean, if somebody's handing out weapons, you're going to grab a weapon and go. I mean, it makes total sense.
So anyway. There's another bit of silliness, but we have to make it to a controversial part of the movie. This is like a moral thing where this is when the Spetsnaz guys, the Special Forces guys, come up into the woods.
Yep.
And the Wolverines take care of them way too easily. But hey, they have grenades that blow up way too big. So what are you going to do? they have really high level weapons now that they've looted. It's like Borderlands.
And it's like I was saying before, like when it was winter time they had snow gear, and now it's sort of like we're into January, it's almost thawing out, and they have like the sand desert gear. Like they're prepared for all situations, just you have to buy into it. It's part of this movie.
Yeah, because they're the Wolverines. But they find this, like, the Special Forces guy had, like a location transmitter thing on it,
Did. Yep.
And they find that it leads to the former class president guy.
Yep.
Who's the son of the mayor, which I only know because I've watched this movie 5-10 times.
They say it, they give it one line, so you should pay attention, but yes.
Yes. And apparently, at some point, nobody noticed that he wasn't at the camp anymore because he went into town and no one noticed he was gone. I mean, did they think he was taking a really long dump out in the woods?
He's doing what he needs to. But, I mean, he was the one that tried to get him to give up right in the beginning of the movie, so they should have known right from the bat.
So, apparently, he went to go see his dad, and his dad is colluding with the Russians.
Yep.
So they captured him and made him like swallow that echolocator device or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
And then so they have a captured Spetsnaz guy and they have their old friend who's a traitor. And Jed says, okay, he doesn't say anything. It just cuts to the next scene where they have them out and they're going to shoot him, basically.
Yep.
And Jed can shoot the Russian guy because he's done it a bunch of times.
He's already a killer. He's a hunter. He knows what's happening.
Right. But he can't shoot his friend that he used to play baseball with.
Nope.
But our buddy C. Thomas Howell, Star Wars hat, but now he has a Wolverine's beret, which I guess they sold at the school store.
They had in their bug out bags. It's all planned. They had it at the start.
He's so hard and has drunk the deer's blood and the Russian guy's blood, apparently.
Yeah.
He just puts like a couple rounds right in their old buddy.
It's World War III. There are no rules.
See you, babe. See you, buddy. So that was a really controversial scene amongst my friend group.
Okay.
Because it's your friend group and you're planning for the Russians to do this. So you come to the 13-year-old conclusion.
Yes.
I mean, of a 13-year-old.
Yes.
That you might have to blow away one of your buddies when he turns on you to the Russians.
It's valid.
So the argument was like, who did the right thing there? Did Jed do the right thing that he couldn't do it? Because like his buddy said, he'd be just like them. Or did C. Thomas Howell do the right thing?
See Thomas Howell? Yeah, see Thomas Howell was just following in his father's footsteps. His father's trying to help the Russians so he can just survive, you know. That's not invalid. It's a logical course of action, but it does make you a traitor. So what do you do?
Traitors will be shot? Is that what you do? You agree with traitors will be shot?
I'm a ride or die type person. Like, I'm once a Wolverine, always a Wolverine. So, you know?
Yeah, that's where Mikey stands. Mikey's behind C. Thomas Howell. A lot of people didn't like that. A lot of people thought that was really controversial.
I get it, but I'm on board with it. I thumbs up it. That seems weird to say, but I agree with it.
Okay. You know me. I'm totally with you. You don't betray the team, even though the problem is like you said, this movie isn't even like a paper cut. It's so shallow with some of the stuff. He kind of alludes to the fact that like they forced me to do it. There's nothing I could do.
Yep.
Which, like I said, these characters are so paper. These characters are so thin that when it happens, you're just kind of like, well, you know, that had to happen. You almost feel worse for that Russian guy. Because the Russian guy's like, say you're my friend so I won't die alone.
Yeah.
You know? And you're like, aw, poor Russian guy. And then the other guy is just like, no, don't do it. Or what? You know, it was just like, you could have easily put more weight on that and had the decision be like, you could just, you know, let him go.
But we have the emotional weight that came beforehand, which is Patrick Swayze saying, don't cry ever. Don't show weakness. Never give up. Like,
no crying.
No crying. No going over to the other side. Ugh, hilarious.
Right. And then we go straight to the it's a trap scene.
It's a trap. Right? Yep.
Do you have anything to comment there? Because to me, it was obvious. It was so obvious it was a trap. And even on Swayze's face, he's a good actor. There's good acting in this.
Mm-hmm.
You can see he's like, I don't think this is okay. But then he's like, they're kind of like, we're really hungry, but they didn't really say we're really hungry. You just have to assume they're really hungry.
Yeah, because that's how this movie does. Assume what you're thinking is correct. We're on to the next scene.
Right. So they send poor Gray out there, like, go ahead and go.
Yep.
Run out there. And she's like, there's good food. It was so, I've seen this movie enough times. It is so obvious someone just pushes that thing out of the back of that truck. It didn't fall. The truck hit no bump.
Nope.
It was so obviously a trap. And of course it was a trap because here come the three giant helicopters.
Yeah.
And the thing is too, is like they went from this group, right? This is the thing that gets me. They went from this group that can't be bested by the Russian special forces.
Nope.
To being like the dumbest kids ever. And like, we're so hungry and we're just going to stay here where we got it and eat it as opposed to just grabbing it and going back to our camp, which we know how to defend because we just defended our camp against the Russian special forces. So grab the food and go back to the camp. But no, we're going to sit here on these rocks
right here
and eat our food
out in the open.
Out in the open. With no sentries or anything.
Nothing.
And then they hear the helicopters and seem surprised in a war zone. He's like, wait a minute, what's that?
I guess that balances.
I don't know what happened. They just went stupid all of a sudden. It drives me crazy.
It balances out the Russians that were running around in town when the helicopters passed over in the first act. It was just like, oh, everybody's a sort of a little bit of a bumbling idiot.
I mean, do you agree with me that they went from competent to stupid in one scene?
Yeah, but they're because I know the end of this movie, they're also setting up the sort of tragic, like, American sacrifice ending. So that's kind of where they had to make it go. So, I mean, they gotta make a mistake at some point, especially if they're high school kids that have taken out, like you're saying, Russian special forces, all kinds of tanks. I mean, they learn strategy in a day, and they have secret bunkers, so...
I know, it's but I perfect. Think you could. I think you could have written the mistake a whole lot better. Is all I'm saying.
Oh, I agree.
So ever since I saw it as a kid, drove me crazy. Still drives me crazy to this day. I just hear Admiral Akbar in my head.
It's a trap.
Yeah. So then, and that also too is seriously, dude. I told you I've seen this movie a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how much movie was left after that scene. Like you said, there's still so much movie left.
Yeah, I was 20 minutes in and I was like, oh, we're halfway through. Nope, there's still like 2 hours to go.
Right. So after that, there's only like, what, four of them left.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, this was, again, this is where this movie within the third act broke to pieces. Like, it wasn't going super, it was a little too quick. I don't know. What I'm saying is that it went off the rails in the third act for me a lot.
I believe
it. And after like the C. Thomas Howell blown away his friend thing, it really went off the rails because you got like suddenly they're bumbling. It's a trap thing.
Yep.
And then there's four of them left. And then for some reason, even though they walked over to the front lines before with their friend,
yep.
The two brothers, the Eckert brothers, have to create a distraction so the other two friends can make it to the front lines.
I'm with
even
you.
Though, yep. Even though before they just strolled over there, like, cause you know, the other two friends have to make it to Free America. And I was like, why are they? Well, I know why they're doing that for one last Rambo moment.
Yep.
But it went off the rails for me here.
Oh, I believe it. And I think you hit it on the head with that, like that C. Thomas Howell taking out his friend. That's like the last big emotional impact of this movie other than the end. And so after that, it's sort of like, all right, we got to wrap this up. So here's what happens, blah, blah, blah. They write their names on the rock. They go into town, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then there's the end of the movie.
Right. Yeah. They just, and again, the two brothers by themselves loaded down with equipment, go into town at night to distract them so their two friends can, it doesn't make any sense, but anyway.
Yep.
So they go into town and they're shooting up the town and the two of them, the Russians just, or Cubans or whoever's in the town at that point, I guess they're just shooting at ghosts at some point because there's a full-scale warfare going on and they're showing the Eckert brothers not shooting at anybody.
Nope.
But you hear all this gunfire and explosions and you're like, who are they fighting? Are the Russians fighting each other? Is it that dark? Do they not have lights? What is going on? I'm so confused.
They're just pre-stormtroopers. They have really bad aim. I don't know.
So, but I know, but you know what I'm saying? There's scenes where the brothers are being stalked by the Russian special forces guy.
Yep.
And they're not shooting anybody. They're just like sneaking around and there are AK-47s and explosions happening in the background. And I'm like, who are the Russians shooting right now? Anyway,
anybody except the Wolverines, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. You do get the fun scene though, where you get kind of the shootout at the OK Corral with the special forces guy with his crazy weird machine pistol thingy jobber, which I don't think is even real. And Jed with his grandpa's old Western revolver.
Of course. Yeah. Good old American made tradition. It's gonna solve the problem. Absolutely.
Right. And they have a nice little shootout. Bam, bam, bam. You know, and so, and then the Russian special forces guy shot Jed's brother mortally. Mm-hmm. And then Jed and him had a shootout and Jed got hit too, but he killed that evil Russian special forces guy.
He hit his target. And then, yep.
And then when he's carrying his brother away, they come across, oh no, here's that Cuban general guy. What is he going to do? And he's just like, vaya con Dios, amigos.
Yeah.
Right? And he lets them go.
Turns out I'm not on the, on my side. I'm on the American side. See you later.
Yeah. Vaya con Dios. And then he carries them back to that playground where his dad was talking about.
Yeah, the bench that started it all. Yep.
Yeah, the bench that started it all. And then you have the nice little moment, I guess. And then end of movie. Except, well, you get the little epilogue where there's partisan rock, right? The rock they wrote their names on.
Yeah.
The American flag. And it alludes to the and like a plaque saying the children partisans fought against the invaders so this could remain a union. So basically, America won. Hooray.
Yeah. And the two girls survived, right? I think both of them
survived. No, the Leia Thompson survived along with one of the...
Oh, that's right.
Not as famous boys.
They get to free America. I forgot Jennifer Grey gets sacrificed. That's right.
Jennifer Grey, yeah. She like held on to a grenade.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. And waited to get turned over, kind of Japanese World War II soldier style.
But like, even still, the ending as a whole is sort of like, I guess that's it. Okay, we're done. Like, roll credits.
There's an American flag waving, man. Come on. Yeah, we did it. Beat the Russians.
Vaya con Dios, I guess.
Vaya con Dios.
I do want to point out that, like, I mentioned that they do strong female characters, but Leah Thompson in this movie is such a badass. Like, they make her awesome. She gets the beret, she gets the machine gun, she's throwing grenades and bombs, and the fact that she survives is absolutely a thumbs up for me, so.
Yeah. All right, so, any final thoughts, Mikey, on the 1984's Red Dawn?
Just real quick, I've already touched on it throughout this episode, but holy crap, does this movie go real fast. Like, it's scene, paratroopers, Russia, occupied, all right, explosions, grenades, like, different outfits. It's crazy. It makes for a good time. Like, you're never bored, but oh man, is this 80s movie making to the extreme. It's just like, we're not going to tell you anything. You're on board. Let's go. We got 2 hours. Let's wrap this up. What about you? What do you think about this movie?
Oh, I agree with you on those points. It is 80s action movie to a T. It does exactly what it was meant to do in the time it was meant to do it.
Yep.
It's almost a movie that needs to be understood in the context in which it was made.
Okay.
I was there and aware when it was out. I rented it from Blockbuster. It was very popular movie, along with the Rambo movies, mm-hmm. along with the Schwarzenegger movies at the time, all those just action flicks. I mean, it's in the vein of all these guys, the mm-hmm. Seagals, Van Dammes, just, you know, all the
Stallones.
Yeah, all this stuff. So I guess that means it's time to give it a pizza rating. Pizza. So, Mikey.
Pizza rating.
Our pizza's here. And the pizza is a pizza with a certain amount of slices. We do our pizza rating, and it's based on a whole pie. So it's an 8-slice pie. So 8 out of 8 would be the best movie ever. I don't think we've ever had an 8 out of 8 movie except for Buckaroo Banzai for Not Scott,
yes,
our producer.
I think that's the only 8 out of 8 so far.
So, because, I mean, everyone knows the great movies. That's not fun. We like to look at other things.
Oh, like to take a look back. But so my pizza's here, but I do have to determine how many slices I'm going to eat in honor of Free America for the Wolverines.
Yes.
So my original hot take slice rating was 3 out of 8 slices, uh-huh. which is real low. I had a good time, but holy crap, this movie doesn't say anything. It's just like, there's Russians and we have bombs and here's what's happening. Go Wolverines, don't cry, avenge me, all that stuff. But I will add one more slice. I will give it a final 4 out of 8 slices because according to IMDb, there are no computer graphics in this movie. Everything you see, all the explosions, all the gunshots were to scale and actual size and in real time. So props to that for old school 80s filmmaking, just having everything be practical. So that gets a slice for me, but that only puts it up at 4 out of 8 slices.
All right, fair enough. Now, if you had asked me in the 80s, I would have probably given this something like 7 out of 8 slices.
Yeah.
Maybe 6 out of 8 at worst. But I've matured and grown since then. But at the same time, I do have nostalgia goggles for it.
Absolutely.
So it's gonna push it up there. Now, the problems that this movie has, like, I could be like, well, I would have might have given it 7 out of 8 back then. But so do you take a slice off? You got to take more than a couple slices off because it's like saying the Rambo movies are good. The Rambo movies are good as Rambo movies. This movie is junk food.
It is
what this is.
Yes.
This movie it's regular candy, you know, and I'm not talking about like the fancy, you know, Swiss chocolate type stuff. What I mean by regular candy is just like regular old, not normal candy that is just junky and sweet and gives you the high, your sugar high.
You're just talking about plain M&Ms, not even peanut. I got you.
Yeah, right. And just, but they're fine. They're good in the right context. Mm-hmm. Everything's great. So I think my final pizza rating for this movie is 5 out of 8.
Okay.
I've given it one more slice than you. Like I said, through it, the acting isn't bad. You can see the underbones of this movie.
Yeah.
The potential is there.
I can see why someone was like, hey, let's reboot this movie. Yes. It'll be real interesting to see what's done with the reboot. I don't have much hope because they don't do a good job with reboots generally, but I can see where someone would be like, oh, this movie could be made well.
I got you.
It's going to be real interesting for us next week because this isn't a Clash of the Titans thing to me, because Clash of the Titans, which we did a reassumption of, the original Clash of the Titans had this kind of charm to it, this kind of goofiness, this kind of fairy tale-ness to it. This movie has none of that. This movie is just, like I said, this movie is a Big Mac, like, right?
Yeah.
To all beef patty, special sauce, loaded cheese, pickles, onions, sesame seed bun. This is this is the crappy, before they had combo meals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What you would go get. So here's an order that people were encouraged to get in the 80s. You ready to hear this? And think about how bad this is for you, right? Big Mac, large fries.
Of course.
Chocolate shake.
Yep.
And an apple pie.
Why not? Round it out.
Because it rhymes. It was a thing back then. Big Mac, large shake.
But that's
Big Mac, large. Big Mac, large fry, chocolate shake, apple pie. That's what this movie is. Because it ends with American apple pie.
Yeah. It's 3,000 calories of just 80s Hollywood. Be like, you like explosions and kids overcoming Russians? Let's do it. Yeah.
This is all your daily calories and one meal plus the regret afterwards.
And your stomach saying, avenge me! Avenge me!
Oh, yeah. But 5 out of 8 is what I give it. Mike gives it a 4 out of 8. Yep. I give it a 5 out of 8. Not the worst movie in the world.
No.
If this movie didn't have Hollywood stars and magic behind it, it would be on MST3K probably.
I believe it. But I defend you. If you are a 13-year-old boy in the 80s watching this movie, absolutely, it's a good time. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Go Wolverines,
right?
All day long.
Yes. Wolverines! So... Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what we find out next week. So
you haven't seen the reboot, right?
I have not. I've never seen it ever.
I have not seen the reboot. We'll be watching it between now and our next episode. So this is a first time for both of us. I'm curious to see what happens.
Yes, for sure. And we are curious what you guys think about Red Dawn.
1984.
So let us know. Are we way off? Is this your like favorite movie ever? You give it 8 out of 8. We're crazy. What's wrong with us? Or are we way off in the other direction? Are you like, this is a piece of junk? This is a jingoistic, right wing, gun loving,
fancy
words. From my cold dead hands movie that, which was in there. That was in there, by the way. That was the bumper sticker and everything.
And then he ended up taking a gun from his cold dead hand. Oh.
And the director was like, give me a gun to direct this movie.
Oh,
so
hilarious.
It's 80s. It's so funny because Hollywood is so different now.
Oh, absolutely. It's
so different now.
Different time.
So different times. What 36 years does, man. Crazy. Anyway, let us know what you think. You can hit us up at Assuming Pod on all our socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Instagram mostly. We also Gmail us, assumingpositions@gmail.com. So let us know. We want to thank you for listening. Again, like we said before, we just want you to know we appreciate it. Our numbers have been really decent. We thank you. Please keep sharing it with your friends. We know we say it every time. We can't wait for this pandemic to be over so we can really head back out there to the conventions and see everybody. And grow our podcast in that way, because that's the funnest way to grow a podcast.
Oh, I miss conventions. I'm ready for them to come back.
Yeah. So in the meantime, tell your friends and share it. And tell them about the Plucky Little Podcast, because I know we're not Joe Rogan or Conan O'Brien. And they're great, and you can listen to them. But hey, come on. Give us a chance.
Support
45
local,
minutes to an hour. Support your local podcast.
Yeah.
We want to thank you guys so much for listening. Also, we want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our announcing. Not Scott Production for equipment, Jazzar for music. And we hope you guys have a great rest of the week. And remember,
Wolverines!
Go Wolverines! Don't cry ever!
Don't cry! Don't cry! Turn it into something else! Let it turn into something else!
Avenge me! Avenge me!